Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for September 9th, 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Good morning.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott from the Tribune and KUT News.
Hello.
Today we are going to be talking about the traditional start of the campaign season now that we got past Labor Day. Polls in the governor's race, the Back to Basics Political Action Committee and the man behind it, and ongoing budget woes here in the state of Texas. So why don't we start with Ross and frame up the season for us that we're heading into?
Well, I guess the only accurate way to say that Labor Day is the start of the campaign is it's really the start of when normal humans begin to pay attention.
It's really the end of people not paying attention.
Right, right. I mean, we've gone through this primary that I like to call the finance primary, you know, where people are raising money. We've gone through the party primaries, the Libertarians have chosen, the Greens have chosen, and all of that happened while you were busy, you know, at the lake or the beach or wherever you spent your summer. And now the ads will begin. Bill White's ads have started, Perry's ads will start, you know, any minute now, and it's going to be wall-to-wall politics in a marketing and in a public sense from here to October 18th, when early voting starts, and November 2nd, which is Election Day.
So you're saying that what's happened in the lead up to Labor Day is not going to determine necessarily the outcome on Election Day. So somebody who is significantly behind in a race, whether it's at the top of the ticket or a race that no one's paying attention to, still has time between now and Election Day to come back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to play, you know, back in the, you know, I'll be Sherman here or Mr. Peabody or something, and we'll go into the Wayback Machine. I mean, 20 years ago, Clady Williams was 15 points ahead of Ann Richards right now.
Right.
You know, Jimmy Carter was ahead
Worst
of Ronald Reagan at this
point. Non-handshake ever.
Right, right. I mean, you know, Jimmy Carter was ahead of Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Right.
A lot can change.
Yeah.
What requires this year, I think, is the environment, at least at this moment, is really, really red. The Republicans are enervated and the Democrats are kind of depressed. Elections are really about getting your people off the couch in numbers, and right now the Republicans are more likely to jump off the couch. So the Democrats have to change the atmosphere. They've got to get their candidates out in front of people in a way that's appealing to voters.
Yep.
And
how much of that is tied to the national mood? In other words, if somehow the president is able to pull a rabbit out of his hat between now and November,
right,
and diminish the enthusiasm of Republicans or raise the enthusiasm of Democrats and hold off some of the losses that are now being predicted. You know, people started talking this weekend about waves becoming tsunamis. And so the question is, if the president can get the tsunami back down to a wave, does that ultimately convey back to Texas in a positive sense?
Sure, sure. There's a, you know, if you kind of, you know, just to take that analogy, if the some races that are some candidates that are in an ordinary year not threatened, their houses are further from the beach, are this year in a floodplain. And if the
bottom half of Elise's list.
Right, right. The bottom half of Elise's list.
Of a few weeks ago, right?
Well, of 21. And, right. And, you know, you look at that, and people that are in the middle of that list are only in trouble if this environment persists. So, yeah, if Obama pulls a rabbit out of his hat, if the Republicans make a big mistake, that waterline changes.
See, I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Here's my disagreement argument. So I think that a lot of this anti-establishment or anti-Obama wave and Tea Party wave, I think that it may have actually, a lot of it started here in Texas. So the wave goes out, it comes back just a normal wave, not a tsunami. Well, that doesn't mean that the atmosphere here hasn't changed. It's just the atmosphere out there changed and didn't come back as, you know, even worse.
We were the trailblazers.
Kind of. I mean, I would argue that might be, you know, that may be another scenario.
I don't completely disagree with that, but the race that's going to draw people to the polls is the governor's race.
Right.
And to the extent that the national stuff is reflected in the governor's race, Perry is going after Washington and Obama and conflating them with Bill White. Bill White is saying, you know, we ought to be talking about Texas, and you're trying to distract us with Washington. If that formula changes some, and the race at the top of the ticket that's the one that's going to draw people one way or the other, I think that'll be reflected all down in House races, down in state representative races, sheriff races, stuff like
and
that.
And to some degree, White is actually playing, oddly, to an audience similar to the one Perry's playing to, in that White is playing to the antis. White is saying, this guy's been in office too long. White's saying, this guy's a career politician. And White would love it if the Tea Party decided, yes, we are agnostic about party. We simply don't like people who are in office or people who have been in office too long. And so we're going to vote for this guy, White.
And
well, it's not likely to happen, but
right.
You understand where the appeal is. One more thing, though, is this is where the whole debate is interesting. If it's a Republican year, then what the Republican Party institutionally and its candidates individually really want to do is win on the basis of the letter R next to their names. They don't have to go out in public and talk about ideas. They don't actually have to campaign. And they certainly don't have to play compare and contrast. They don't have to debate. So they'd like to just basically take a knee and run the clock out. And if you're their guys, you can understand the rationale.
The great example here is the Railroad Commission race here in Texas,
right,
where David Porter doesn't present well in public. He's getting a little better, but he's just not great in public. Jeff Weems, the Democrat in that race, does. And so the Porter campaign has minimized the number of times when those two appear together. When they do appear together, I did a forum in Fort Worth where the Porter gang didn't want to be on stage with the Weems gang, so we did serial interviews. So exactly what you're talking about. If nobody knows who you are and you're a generic R running against a generic D, you win the race.
Generic R wins the race, and that's why you don't debate.
Let's take a pulse of that top of the ticket race, Evan, and kind of frame it in terms of the polls that came out.
A couple interesting polls came out this week. You know, big caution flags have to be raised about both of them. You know, Texas Watch, which is a consumer group that is basically, it is said, full of trial lawyers, is presumed to be more of the left-leaning variety.
A lot of Democratic ops on their board.
Indeed.
They're Democrats.
Has a poll out that shows the race miraculously tied, miraculously because no poll has shown the race. There's a Rasmussen poll a few months ago that had it, I think, at 4 points. But no poll has shown the race to be, in essence, tied. I think it was 42 Perry,
public
41
policy polling did.
White. But it's a while ago, though, at this point, isn't it? 42 Perry, 41 White, 14% undecided. On the heels of that comes a poll that was funded by Bernard Rappaport, who is a Waco a businessman, longtime Democrat, longtime Democratic donor, that was ultimately was conducted by John Zogby, who is a well-known pollster, not without his issues and controversies, but Zogby. And it showed the race at about 4 points. I think Perry was somewhere like 44.5. White was somewhere like 40.5, basically. So the combination of these two polls over the last couple of days coming out has led people to believe maybe the race is tightening. Now, other polls may come out soon. We suspect that there'll be a newspaper poll out soon. Hell, there may even be a UT Texas Tribune poll out at some point. And so we'll have more polls to judge. But these polls, both because of Texas Watch's theoretical partisan leanings and Bernard Rappaport's actual partisan leanings, are viewed with suspicion. Those leanings don't necessarily invalidate the results. And in the case of the Texas Watch poll, the polling firm that conducted it was a Republican associated firm, right?
Right, Hill Research out of Houston.
Hill Research out of Houston. So hard to dismiss the findings. I mean, I'm moved to ask, beyond the question of whether the polls are accurate, do these polls matter? It's a cliche because it's true the only poll that matters is on Election Day, and we can attach too much importance to this. But, you know, while two polls doesn't demonstrate a significant shift in the race, two is more than one.
Well, polls matter for the same reason you care what the score is in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
it dominates the narrative.
It's kind of a where are you? It establishes momentum. It establishes it. You know, I mean, campaigns will tell you that if a bad poll will cut the money off, a good poll will start the money valve back up.
Absolutely.
Both sides here are going to be trying to manipulate, and already are, frankly, trying to manipulate coverage of these polls. You know, you shouldn't look at this poll. You should look at our poll. You shouldn't look at, you know, both sides are doing that. I think they matter in that sense. And I think, you know, there's a lot, you know, we all like to cry about horse race politics, but horse race politics is part of politics, and it's part of the interesting part of politics. People want to know how the race is going, in addition to the other things that they want to
know. Do you at least believe these polls?
I just don't like them in general. I don't like covering polls in general, and I want to take a stand on that because it draws us into covering the horse race.
But you let me make this my topic.
Right.
You're an enabler.
Well, I mean, I also like to disagree on the podcast.
You dug a ditch and then asked me to walk into it.
I also like us to disagree. So, in general, I know how it's interesting, but as a journalist, I hate to even report on them because I feel like, A, they can somehow have an influence on the race itself or it can influence voters and their decisions in terms of whether they're going to go out and vote or not, if it's a wide margin or if it's tight. And then, B, if we're covering a poll, we're not covering an issue or, you know, an enterprise story.
Right, so but I think the argument that Ross is making, which is interesting, is that the narrative is one of the issues that you talk about. I mean, the fact is,
it's part of the mix.
It's part of the conversation.
It's not the story. I think when we really get in a hole in the media is when all we cover is the horse race. But I think you got to cover the horse race and you got to cover the issues.
In context.
And I just think you do all of it and you let people find their way. I mean, if you do a story on this one's take on the budget and that one's take on the budget, that's going to have as much influence on voters potentially as any story you do about horse
races. And let's also say that two polls that show a total counter to the narrative that's out there in the larger world are more interesting inherently than two polls that confirm the narrative out there. If both polls that came out showed Perry beating White by 12 points, I think that's you have a different reaction to that than two polls that are going, well, wait a minute, these polls actually show that the race is closer, and maybe there's something going on here. Now, Ben, it's true that the polls were both in the field, in the vicinity of, I know we're going to talk about the Coward ad and Back to Basics in a second, but there was a timing question about when these polls were in the field, right?
Well, the people, Hill Research, they, when I talked to them yesterday, they didn't feel like there was any, no matter when it was in the field, they didn't feel like there was any political moment that would have influenced this poll.
Yeah.
They feel like the biggest thing with their poll was that they asked who you were going to vote for very early in the poll, and maybe kept partisan issues after that, so that maybe your partisan blood wasn't boiling and you jumped for one person or the other, which showed in 14% of the people saying that they were undecided, which is a higher number than others.
Yeah.
I think in terms of both those polls, you've got to look at Bill White is at 40% in both. So the undecided are either going to vote for Perry or they're not, or they're being undecided. I mean,
if the undecided break by the same percentage that the decided break, that's better for the governor.
Right, and especially if these people are identifying as independents, independents in Texas break.
Have tended to break more for Republicans.
Right.
Right. One of the interesting things is all the sad sacks like me who wrote stories leading into Labor Day about this thing going on, we're looking at all of the polls up to that point, and it was an 8 or 9 point difference in virtually all the polls. There was one outlier back in May,
right,
but most of the polls had this an 8 or 9 point race, and in the last 24, 48 hours, we've seen these two polls. The question is when we see other polls come to the fore in the next week or 10 days, whether these turn out to be outliers or whether this was part of a new trend.
And ultimately, whether it matters, because the only poll that's going to matter, again, when we all go to vote.
But these polls do kind of raise a good question that Evan alluded to about the effectiveness or lack thereof, or lack of effectiveness of these Back to Basics ads. So this summer, this new political action committee formed, largely backed by Steve Mostyn, a trial lawyer out of Houston who made something like $86 million last year in windstorm insurance claims after Ike, last year and this year, actually.
Wow.
And
call him the weatherman.
He's been able to support this political action committee almost on his own, and they've run 3 television commercials up until this week. This week they released their 4th on insurance. The other commercials were about Perry's rental home, the $10,000 a month rental home, about the Trans-Texas Corridor. And then he ran those Coward ads all over the state.
24 out of 25 newspapers in which he attempted to place those ads.
Full page newspaper ads calling out Perry for not debating. The question is whether these commercials that have played in markets like Dallas, especially in Dallas, really, with a lot of people, expensive television market, it's going to be a big battleground in terms of the Texas House races, whether these ads have made a difference at all. Do you think the polls are an indication of this media saturation by Back to Basics and whether they've been able to move the needle, or are these polls just faulty?
My inclination at the beginning is to say they're faulty, but that's just because they're a different direction from what we've been seeing. These may turn out to be accurate, but if you get a couple of, for one thing, these aren't third-party polls. If you get a third-party poll that's really agnostic about who wins the race and is really trying to do the science of this instead of the politics of this, by which I mean they're trying to find out where the public is instead of trying to help the public move toward their candidate, I think there's a couple of reasons to suspect these polls. If you get a poll in the next week or so that's basically before the ads start, and then you get some polling that's closer to the election, after Perry and White and other candidates have been going wall-to-wall TV, wall-to-wall mailbox, all of that kind of stuff, calling you on the phone every 15 minutes, that's when you get sort of an interesting poll thing, is you get this poll before and you get this poll after, and then you actually see who's moving the ball.
I just am not sure that there's been enough, number one, people paying attention this summer, and number two, actual interesting moments going on to have moved any poll, even if we looked at the summer polls and why is this one jumped this way, which is, as we were talking about at the beginning of time, this is now when people will start paying attention.
So I'm going to say something I've said before, and I continue to believe it, and maybe as we get close to Election Day I believe it even more, and that is, if this race is conducted as a referendum on Bill White, it is nearly impossible for Bill White to win. if this race is conducted as a referendum on Rick Perry, Bill White has much more of a chance. What the Back to Basics ads do is take this race and turn it more into a referendum on Rick Perry. That is better for Bill White. Now, whether that translates into an uptick in the polls, I can't say. But if the White campaign, either itself or other organizations acting independent of or semi-independent of and on behalf of the White campaign, decide to spend a bunch of money pummeling the governor, ultimately, that's going to be good for White. Now, what it may do is not necessarily take people and put them in the White camp. It may put them in the undecided camp. And this comes back to this 14% undecided in the Hill Research poll. The man, Rick Perry, has been governor for 10 years. Who is undecided about Rick Perry at this point? If 14% of the people are truly undecided, that may reflect uncertainty on the part of people who were with the governor, created by things like these pummeling ads. I don't know that that's the case. But the fact that they're not automatically going from Perry to White is itself interesting to me. I mean, if these are people who were Republican voters who now are going, I don't know about this, how do we read their sudden fainting spells about voting for the governor? Are they going to simply snap back? Are they going to vote for White? Or are they going to stay home? And if they stayed home, that would be interesting because that would trickle downstream in some close races.
Well, Mostyn sounded like, when he spoke with us at length last week, it sounded like he expected it still to be a Republican state and possibly hinted that White was going to lose, or he expected that he was going to lose.
I don't think he possibly hinted. I think he more or less came out and said, yes, I acknowledge that the money I've spent is almost certainly going to be money spent for no purpose, except to
start somewhere.
Start something. But his argument was, and I think this is actually a legitimate point, that you cannot overnight change the world, and you got to spend money now, hopefully for results, if not now, then later. And by the way, the Republicans did this in the 90s.
Well, I was going to say, there's always a rich guy in Texas politics. There's Eddie Chiles.
There was a guy named James Leininger.
There's Ross Perot. There's always a rich guy in Texas politics. And they don't, as a rule, change the tide. Now, they sort of aid a lot of candidates. But, Leininger famously put $5 million into one election year. There were five big House races. They lost three of them. One of them they won because everybody thought Wayne Christian was already the incumbent. And, it's just...
Who was the rich guy behind Parent PAC? Didn't Parent PAC one year have an impact on the outcome of Republican primaries and get a bunch of people in office and a bunch of other people out of office?
Yeah, it was more of a mixture of people, but it was,
The fact is there have been movements in the past, people wanted to affect change and they spent money at moments that seemed to be unlikely to succeed.
But these one-guy movements like this, don't have a great history.
Well, that's true. And Mostyn, by his own admission, may not have a great history this year.
They have a great history. They don't have a great one-loss record.
Yeah.
One final topic. Ben, it is yours. Budget back in the news a little bit this week.
Well, I went and spoke with a bunch of county officials from the Texas Association of Counties last week, and it's really interesting to talk to them. They are, I think, a range from, very concerned to petrified about the budget cuts coming up. In 2003, when budget cuts were made, a lot of those cuts trickled down to the county officials, not just as a cut to a program, but, we are cutting your funding, but we fully expect you to maintain this program and keep it going. So unfunded mandates or fee increases, doubling of your fishing license or whatever. And the county collects all this stuff. When you go pay your property taxes, you pay them to the county. So you're very often could be really mad at the county and not at the people higher up who may have done things that ended up with your property taxes increasing. A lot of that's school property taxes, but you don't pay it to the school, you pay it to the county, so you're mad at the county. They're concerned again this year. I mean, $18 billion as opposed to 10. The budget's much larger, so it's not a gigantic percentage jump, but they're worried about this. And they have said, I talked to one county official, county judge from up in the Panhandle area, a place you would assume is a very conservative voting part of the state.
Sure.
And he said, we can no longer continue to provide the essential services that our county needs without additional revenue.
Right.
And which is nothing you will hear from a conservative at the state legislature.
And to that end, Kirk Watson has actually sent a letter this week to Susan Combs, the comptroller, asking for no more surprises, essentially, you know, a clearer revenue
estimate.
Well,
it's basically, I mean, you know, everybody's guessing at this, right, at the size of the shortfall. And one guess is $18 billion. That's sort of the prevalent
guess. A guess, by the way, confirmed by Joe Straus, apparently. I read somewhere this morning, was it in Embry or someplace this morning, had remarks that Straus had delivered in which he basically said, yeah, it's going to be $18 billion. Other people are saying, "Oh, that number is made up," but the speaker apparently is saying
he's real. He's also, you know, one of the people that will tell you, you know, and it could be higher. Jim Pitts, his appropriations chairman, says, and it could be higher. Now there's a group over on the other side of the building that says it's only going to be $10 billion. What Watson went to Combs for was, "Hey, you're the chief financial officer. Give us a number." It's interesting that
and the governor has now popped Watson for
daring to ask for information.
You know, they've informed the, you know, this is sort of like, don't pay attention to what's happening at the adults table. You know, when you're at Thanksgiving, it's, you know, Combs has been very good about telling Dewhurst and Perry and Straus about what's going on, and don't you children worry about it. And what Watson is saying is, you know, give us the number. Now, 4 years ago, it was really interesting when the controller, or I guess when Strayhorn ran, the controller withheld the number. For, I guess it's the year before she ran. The last time we had a deficit coming, she didn't tell everybody how big it was until after the election. Mm-hmm. It was $5 billion. It was $5 billion. It was $5 billion. There was an election. It was $10 billion.
Right.
And everybody went crazy, including the governor, saying the controller should have let these numbers out earlier and told everybody in Texas what was going on. Wind the clock forward. Here we are with him saying it's bizarre to ask for it.
And add to that the fact, although I you know, I'm not impugning Susan Combs's integrity, but she is the chair of the Republican victory effort this year.
She is.
And to whose benefit does not releasing a scary big number redound? It redounds to the benefit of those same Republicans.
And the only Republican statewide elected official who does not have a Democratic opponent.
Susan Combs.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. What happens if it's 25? I mean, yeah, you can't release
that. Yeah. Well, Five to 10 is one thing, 18 to 40.
What's interesting here, I mean, you know, you're asking voters to make a decision in the blind. So if you have the number, I'm not sure that they do have the number. If the controller has a number or can, you know, put it in the right ballpark, they're giving voters information voters might use when they vote.
I'm happy to give up my seat at the podcast live at KLRU on September 14th to the comptroller. If she wants to come in and tell Texas the number,
Evan's offering up his seat.
I will be happily otherwise occupied that night.
Even a wild guess. Yeah. I mean, she hasn't even offered a wild guess. Although she is the one who said in the bond documents that the state put out that we're running a deficit right now and that we're behind in these things. So there's hints of trouble here.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this week's Tribcast. Next week, as Evan mentioned, we will be live. It's going to be our first Tribcast recording in front of a studio audience. So if you are in Austin, it's at KLRU Studios, and you can RSVP online at www.texastribune.org at the events tab. It is free to attend. And
we promise to all pick on Ben in a very amusing way.
Yes, publicly.
Which is no different than any other.
There may be shaving.
No different than any other Tribcast. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next week. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Ben, I'm Elise. Goodbye.